You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCS News Talk 580, welcome aboard to Prout Financial Design's New Retirement Radio with the gang from Prout Financial Design, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
It is so good to see you here, Ron. Thank
you. Yes, sir. Likewise.
In the midst of winter. All that snow, it's such a mess. You know, it's just all over the place. It's cold.
To go out there and ski in it or hike
in it
or something.
Get involved.
Yeah.
I was glad for the ski mask yesterday morning because it was about 10 degrees and the wind was about 15. Normally that would have turned me around, but with a mask.
Hey, you didn't walk into a bank or anything like that, did you?
No, I didn't walk into a snowbank because it can be hard to see because glasses fog up.
You don't walk into
like a real bank.
Like a real bank with a ski mask on.
Yeah, you didn't mean a snowbank.
They're going to push the button and let the police know.
Who's that old man with a ski mask?
He looked scary to me. I actually took a picture of it. I don't know why. Well, it's great to be here. Speaking of rabbit trails, how are you all this morning? So good to have you all with me. We're on the radio, after all, aren't we?
The radio.
The radio.
Right.
Well, it's great to be here on January 18th of 24. If you are listening to the rebroadcast, it is January 20th of 2024. But we are glad to be here. We're going to be talking about the economy, the economic stats of the day. In fact, there's so many stats that I struggled with what to say today. So that's why I'm kind of rambling here in the front. We don't really want to talk about it anyway, do we? No, but if you do have a question of a financial nature, we're going to hit it hard here today. And for those of you who came out to our class yesterday, what fun. What fun that was. We were talking about new resolutions, New Year's resolutions, from information that we had just inflammation, as you say sometimes, Ron.
Inflammation.
Yes, indeed. That we came up with ourselves, and the Beth Shire back at the office put together so assiduously. The word of the day, assiduously.
Yes.
Before we get into all of this stuff, joining us is the Heidi Cartwright. Hello, Heidi.
Hello, Dennis. It's great to be here this morning.
She thinks.
You sounded like Newman on Seinfeld. Hello, Dennis.
Hello.
Hello, Newman.
Newman. She is our own RICP and Managing Director. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you.
She's going to be talking about FAFSA and the new rules regarding grandparents helping fund their grandchild's education.
You always have to be careful when they come out with something where they say they're going to simplify something.
Yeah, be careful. Be careful. And Nathan Prout joins us, too. Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Our own financial advisor and director of client account services. Glad to have you here, too. He's going to be getting involved in the stats of the day, big time. Big time stats. So here's a great quote from John Wayne. Anybody remember John Wayne?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a big guy, hey, Western dude.
Hey, Pilgrim.
Life is hard, he said. It's harder if you're stupid. For investors, not being stupid means, number one, being wary of the information you get from newspapers and television news. Is anybody wary of information that they see today?
Yes.
Two, relying primarily on hard data, not soft data that comes from surveys, because surveys are mostly terribly inaccurate these days because very few respond anymore. And if you try to call somebody on the phone, what's their number? I have no idea. Three, with hard data, being cautious about highly revised time series. It's all about trust, and so is the table below. So the question of the day, Ron, is
yes.
The three at the bottom in terms of trust, the institutions Americans trust most and least, what would the three be that you would say would get in the very bottom?
Well, politicians or Congress.
Oh, whoa, you hit it. Bullseye. Right at the very bottom, the bottom jag, 8%. 8% for Congress.
Not good.
What would be the second one you might guess?
I'm going to say news media.
Yeah, you got it again. Although that is the third worst. Okay. Well, no. They're tied.
Wow.
14%. Television news.
Television news. Yeah.
The other one is big business. Big business.
Big pharma. Big oil.
Yes.
Big business.
Yeah.
There you go. What's trusted the most, Dennis?
Small business.
Yes.
And the military second. So small business at 65%. The military is 60%. The military is still at 60%. Honestly, that's encouraging. The police, 43%. Medical system, 34%. So that's interesting. And share of U.S. respondents, that was from June of 23. Gallup.
So that Gallup. Was a survey as well?
It was a survey. Do we trust it? That's exactly what I was thinking.
Right.
Who ran that survey?
Should we take this to heart?
I was reading the fine print on that one. While the year 2023 was a good one for stock prices, it certainly was, optimism for the year ahead is probably running too hot, according to our own economist. And the greed fear cycle shown below, we are probably past the exuberance phase and moving into the euphoria phase. Well, statistically, things don't look too bad because of where we're at in terms of hard data. Hard data. Now, the head of Capital Group, their own investment division, chairman and chief investment officer of the Capital Group, he posed these questions, or he said these questions are they're asking today. And number one, AI, artificial intelligence, and which companies then will profit or do well? Which companies are positioned to win the AI race, which I think is a great question to ask. Second, will electricity, wind, and solar power displace fossil fuels? Why does everyone always so disrespect fossil fuels? I just don't understand it, Ron.
Yeah,
I just don't understand.
I'm lost on that, too.
They work.
They work.
It does tend to. Well, just try to start your car without it, right? We won't talk about that.
I was going to try to charge that car, and good luck.
Okay. And how long will that process take in terms of the transition? In the bond markets, will the federal funds rate at the 22-year high? Are we at the start of a historic opportunity as real income returns to the fixed income universe? It means the interest rates are this good. Could bonds be a good investment going forward? All of a sudden, those rates are a lot better in the 4-5, almost 6% range, depending on the type of bond you're looking at. So that's kind of compelling. And it does make it easier on the more conservative side to make money, as some might say.
So you said 4-6% is pretty good on the bonds.
Yes.
What's to stop somebody from saying, I'll take that? That's guaranteed pretty much, isn't it?
Pretty much.
Pretty much. To say, I'll just get out of the market completely, forget the risk, and I'll just take my 5, maybe 6% guaranteed.
Well, Ron, you've fallen right into my lesson here today. It's causing me to skip ahead. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to skip ahead in my notes. to see this, but a window of opportunity for moving cash off the sidelines. See, there the grass right there, Ron.
Yep.
Isn't that great?
Two different colors of blue.
Yes.
Yes.
So what that's saying, you know, I was at the grocery store the other day. I wasn't saying that. I'm just doing another rabbit, you know, rabbit trail.
Yes.
But a couple were there that I've known for years. And she said, you know, Dennis, I can just tell you love doing that radio show. And I was just thinking, I really do. It's like my favorite addiction of the week. Well, after seeing my wife, of course, you know, that's yes. always first.
Uh-huh, honey.
So, cash equivalents in the 5 years after a hike, after the hikes that we've seen, which were significant, perform at about 3.2% per year.
What?
Because rates come down, cash equivalents, T-bills, that sort of thing, because those are at 5 right now. And you bring up a great point, because those rates are so high, so high. Core bonds, 7%. So 3 versus 7. Now, the year directly after, core bonds, and now this is tend to be a more conservative bond portfolio, 10% on an average. Does this mean that they will necessarily perform that way this year? No. It's just statistically, in the last four tightening cycles, that's what the numbers have been. Now, U.S. stocks, here's a real mind blower, 16%, 16.2 to be exact. In the 1 year following, after a tightening cycle has been done with. We're done with that. That's where the Fed is coming out and saying, listen, we're going to loosen here. Rates are going to come down. The average decline in the 18 months after the last Fed hike in terms of interest rate is class?
Over 18 months?
Yeah, 18 months. Average decline in interest rates, Fed fund rate.
1.5.
Good guess. 2.5. 2.5%. So that's the average. U.S. stocks, again, at 16.2. A 60-40 blend. 60% stocks, 40% bonds. Average rate of return, 14.2% in the year after. Now, I don't know that all of those were in a presidential election cycle. But that's one of the things that are the storm clouds, if you will. Because that certainly is going to increase uncertainty for those who are investing funds. So AI number one, the power versus fossil fuels, you know, solar power, that sort of thing, versus fossil fuels. Interest rates, trying to make a determination of where those are going to go, most likely down. Government debt levels raised in all of our research. Now, Mr. Ed Yardini talking about this specifically. Who's that man? Ed Yardini says he recognizes the sovereign debt problem. That's our own debt. Mr. Yardini admits that too much federal debt can cause an oversupply of treasury bonds relative to demand, which could set off a debt crisis. In essence, not enough people buying those bonds, and the price thus having to come up. And now, already, the cost of funding the government debt has just risen dramatically. Because guess what? Of course, interest rates have come up that much. So in terms of treasury bills, which were previously less than 1% being at 5, government debt levels skyrocketing as a result of that. Even though revenues, this is approximate, have gone up about 8% from taxes, the debt levels, the spending has gone up by 12%. So at some point, the era of believability is going to be in doubt in terms of our own debt. That is the concern. You know, at what level can they continue to borrow to fund continuing operations and have those people or institutions willing to buy that self-same debt, as it were?
Just kidding here, but if Congress and the president got together and had a plan or substantially demonstrated that they were cutting spending, maybe narrowing the deficit, how would that affect, do you think, interest rates or stock and bond values?
If they actually had a plan where they got their heads together, I would think it would be a driver of lower interest rates for sure, because it would instill confidence. The same thing it would do in terms of simplifying, maybe oversimplifying, but the Social Security situation, where by 2035, they're going to be beyond being able to fund it, and they will have driven down the excess, if you will, down to zero.
Wow.
And it's going to be funded by simply current income or revenue from the Fed, from those who are funding from taxpayers. Right now, taxpayers are putting in about 75% of the cost with their own tax revenues that they're paying into Social Security. The balance of the other 25% is coming from the excess that Social Security has. But they're bleeding down that excess, if you will. And that, thus, we're going to be behind there if something isn't done before then. So we're generally going to be in higher rates looking into 2024. Their own analyst believes yields may remain at levels considered normal prior to the global financial crisis and hover in the range of 3.5% to 5.5%. So rates could well remain at higher levels than we previously were known. And for instance, I believe right now the 30-year mortgages is about 7%. It was previously at about 8%, so it's dropped pretty significantly in these last few months. But it may hang more likely in the 5.5% to 6% range, given that it does come down. Now, we've also had rolling recessions may limit the likelihood of a broad downturn, rather. So that's happened in travel, oil, housing, and semiconductors. It's interesting to look at these graphs here and see that most of this occurred in 20 and or the end of 22. So these rolling recessions, we've had price breaks, if you will, and or slower economic results from different sectors of the economy, but it's not impacted the overall. That's actually a good thing for the economy. Some of the other things that are of concern, U.S. and China, their issues related to each other. Government debt levels, which I think we've discussed. Ukraine, and Israel. Are those altercations going to grow wider? And then seventh, the presidential election. The presidential election. Earnings are expected to rise, according to the Wall Street Journal. According to Wall Street analyst, by about 11% this year. That's actually a very good thing. Earnings for companies in general. Capital Group, which we're using as our research here, said that they were more moderate in their estimates, closer to 6 to 8%. And then they also talk about where they view the opportunities. Could well be in a diversified portfolio for those who are comfortable with that sort of allocation. That's the word I wanted. It was on the tip of my tongue, just not in my head. So given that sort of allocation, the chances for a return are relatively good this year in spite of all of these concerns that everyone raises. Isn't that interesting? These markets tend to climb a wall of worry, although others would say this market definitely got ahead of itself and the risk is certainly higher today. I would agree with that opinion. Yeah. So those opportunities in conservative companies, especially if prices decline in the short term, and understanding the history of these markets and how they respond, given this huge increase that we've seen in interest rates from 1 to 5, that's an incredible increase. So there is going to be some running space for a steadily increasing economy here in the future, given that we've already had rolling recessions and most likely interest rates coming down. What this means from a presidential standpoint, a presidential election, it's anybody's guess. Anybody's guess.
So the 5% is not bad relatively, but we were used to 0 or 1
right.
Or 2 for a while.
Right. You hear some folks saying, well, I got my mortgage at 3% or less.
Yeah.
So those numbers, given how high they went, and the fact that it did cause some rolling recessions within the economy itself, although it didn't impact enough to impact the whole economy. The other one is inflation. Will that take the consumer off their goalpost, if you will, in terms of spending? Because inflation, unfortunately, what happens with inflation, we've had some phone calls about inflation and what it's doing for those on fixed income, is once that price goes up, it very seldom comes back down. It will usually stay right there, maybe increase at a lower rate. But it also points up the issue and or problem or solution in some respects of saying, I need some investments to perform ahead of inflation. How do I do that within my own risk tolerance level? What could make sense for me and or us in terms of trying to gaze into the future, given that everything doesn't look awful right now, to invest in a diversified manner to achieve some growth over time, given our risk tolerance and all the rest that we're trying to accomplish? Heidi, FAFSA, what every FAFSA advisor, parent, and student should know, please.
That's right, and this information comes to us from Franklin Templeton. But before I jump in, I just wanted to refer back. You talked about the lunch and learn that we had yesterday at the office. But we do have some other ones coming up, Dennis, isn't that right, in February and March?
We do. Talking about real estate in February, it's the third Wednesday of each month. From noon to 1, lunch is served, and we're pretty excited because the third Tuesday would be then the 21st of Feb.
Third Wednesday.
Why do you keep saying Tuesday?
I don't know.
What's the matter with Mr. Prout?
I don't have that answer.
21, February 21, Wednesday, and or March 20th. March 20.
And we have a
Wednesday.
Couple of guest speakers coming in that we're really excited about. In February, we have Holly Hack coming in to talk about real estate. And, you know, buying and selling real estate in retirement is always a big question. Or maybe you're downsizing, or maybe you're getting a second home and getting some of those questions answered, or maybe some best practices. And then in March, we have Bob Simpson coming up from, he is the manager of our local Social Security office, and there's always so many questions about Social Security, and so this is a great forum for people to learn about it and to get their questions answered.
So if you do want to sign up for either one or both of those classes, our phone number is 231-947-3992, and speak with Melissa, if you would, and or leave a message if you call during lunchtime. 231-947-3992, and we'll get you signed up for the class.
Yes.
Hey, by the way, Heidi,
yes.
I'm going to mention as a preface, in Michigan, there's a bill in the legislature that would make filling out one of these FAFSA forms a high school graduation requirement. So if a straight-A student did not, for some reason, have his parent or parents fill out the form, he or she could not graduate.
Wow.
Yeah, it's required. That's a bill that's being proposed right now.
This is even more reason to listen to all the changes. So what is FAFSA? FAFSA is the free application for federal student aid. You just have to love all the acronyms they come up with. So this is a form that people who are going to be attending college or are currently in college would fill out. And some of the aid or benefits that you are eligible for are determined from the information that goes into this form. And I would just remind people, this is for the aid coming through the school, but if you're applying for a grant or a scholarship, you always want to go back and check that particular benefit to make sure either they're using the FAFSA form or they may have other criteria. So it's not something that, you always have to check as to what you're looking into. So what are some key highlights of the changes coming with FAFSA? Well, one, they're reducing the number of questions. So that's actually good because it'll take you less time to fill this form out. So some of these are positive and some are negative. A second highlight is that the eligibility formula and the calculation of the Student Aid Index, which is referred to the SAI, will replace what we're used to, people who are used to using this form. It used to be the Expected Family Contribution, or the EFC. So they're changing titles and they're changing the calculation. They also have expanded the definition of what the cost of attendance is, or that's referred to as the COA. And this is reported by schools, and it's been redefined to substantially expand the number of things that they're going to put in that number from the original definition. And then some name changes. The FAFSA submission summary is going to be used instead of the student aid report. And they are going to offer automatic transfer of IRS tax forms right directly to the FAFSA, so that that will populate all of the number requirements or information that you had to fill out before.
So they've tried to streamline it somewhat.
Somewhat. So okay. What are the most impactful changes? Because that's what all of us will be interested in. So, you know, remember, even if you're a grandparent of college-age students, if you have high school students that are going to be using these forms, these things, by knowing some of this information, you can help make your plan a little bit more efficient and better to use.
Especially those who save are saving for grandkids and or children as well. There are going to be significant impacts there here.
Right, because our first point speaks to that. 529 college saving plan assets, so 529 accounts in the grandparent or other family member accounts, will no longer be reported on the FAFSA, and therefore 529 assets will have no impact on financial aid calculations.
Now, this has been a huge negative in the past for those who are saving for their grandchildren through 529 plans, because it was going to be counted against their ability to qualify for certain aid, and now that's going to be removed for, Heidi, grandparents, right?
Grandparents, aunts and uncles.
Yeah. If you're a parent and you're, say, low income, and you fill out the form and you say our expected family contribution is $5,000, that's the best we can do. Meanwhile, though, unbeknownst to FAFSA, grandma and grandpa have a load of money and a 529 that they're going to spend. You don't have to declare that.
That's right, and you used to have to say any 529 that was in that person, that beneficiary's name, had to be reported. But now if it's the grandparents, they don't have to report that amount as a source of funding. Hmm. Yeah.
Correct.
Will you have to pay the loans back if you get any student loans?
If you get a loan, you have to pay it back. That's just general knowledge there.
I guess that remains to be seen, Ron, whether we'll have to pay it back, eh?
Well, I guess some people these days don't have to, yeah. Some are being forgiven.
But I don't know where you've seen that, Ron, but anyway, I just...
In general, you're supposed to pay the loans back.
Okay.
Okay, several sources of untaxed income will no longer be reported as income, such as veterans benefits, workers' compensation, and cash child support by a divorced parent. So these used to be counted as income, and they are no longer. Included in that group are going to be contributions to 401ks and 403bs. However, simple and SEP contributions will continue to be assessed as income. So this is a good change for 401ks, but if you're in a simple, you're still in the same boat.
Okay. So in essence, smaller employers or employees of smaller organizations are still not going to get a break if they are in a simple plan or SEP IRA, which SEPs tend to be for self-employed individuals. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there will be less aid for multiple children in college. The number of children in college will no longer be reported. Therefore, the parental contribution of the SAI will no longer be divided by the number of children enrolled in school. And this is something that I benefit from because I had two children in school at the same time, and that really affected the amount of benefits my kids could get, the financial aid they could get. So that's unfortunately no longer going to be in effect. For small business owners and for families that reside on a family farm, their asset exclusions have been eliminated. Going forward, they must report their assets on FASFA. So if you could exclude the farm from the FASFA form, that value in the family assets, you will no longer be able to do that.
Wow.
And then my last impactful change note here is the cost of attendance has been redefined and substantially expanded to include an accurate cost of attendance. It will now include tuition and fees, housing and meals, books and other course materials, transportation and personal expenses, loan fees, and costs associated with obtaining a professional license or credential. So
there's some interesting changes that have come about, and it's interesting to see the loopholes, in essence, that they allow for those who are trying to save for their children and or especially grandchildren's education. And that can be really handy in terms of what that means for the value of those accounts going forward, as long as these rules remain in effect.
Right. And so I have a little list. So who is benefited by all the changes we went over? Students from low-income families, independent students and single parents with low income, students with grandparents and or other family members with 529 accounts, students with non-parent family members who provide financial support, including aunts and uncles, and students with parents who contribute to a 401k or a 403b. Now, the disadvantaged from all these rules are students whose families have more than one child in college, students from families who own a small business or a farm, students from middle and upper income families with high assets, and students with divorced families. Those are all those that will have a negative impact. And just as a matter of note, just keep in mind that like the 2024-2025 FAFSA information or result will be based on income information from the 2022 tax return. So you're reporting this year what happened in 2022. So when you're planning, you have children in college, remember there's that lag there. So when you're trying to do planning of maybe upping your contribution to your 401k because it's not included in that income number, you want to be doing this in advance of actually when they go to school. Mm-hmm. And so that's just a little planning tip there. Keep in mind the dates and what is being affected. I know I watched mine because I waited to make changes to different things based on what year income I was reporting.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Heidi. It is a strategy, or as some presidents would say, strategery. There you go.
A text question here for the panel. If we already have an existing Roth and we're over 65 years old, if we convert other traditional IRAs into new Roths, do we have to wait for the five-year rule, or does our age or our previous Roth exempt us?
So we're talking about conversions here. If we have an existing Roth and we're 65, we convert other IRAs. What do you say, Heidi, to that?
Well, each conversion is looked at separately, but once you're over that 59 and a half, it makes it available to you to take a distribution without any kind of penalty.
Right. Ooh. So there is no 10% penalty, but keeping in mind, what does that limitation really mean? Because you're over 59 and a half? Well, all your principal comes out without any penalty. It's the interest that would be penalized otherwise. So let's say you've got $5,000 converted from 5 years ago. That amount would come out free of any tax, the principal plus whatever it had grown to. Now, we have a five-year clock in distributions ordering rules sheet here.
You do. I'll vouch for that.
Yeah. Yes. See, Heidi just pulled out. So conversions, as Heidi mentioned, each have their own five-year limitations. But again, keep in mind, those limitations are not that great unless you want to pull out the whole sum. within that five-year period that includes your principal and interest. So again, if you converted $5,000 today and you wanted to take that self-same $5,000 out 9 months from now, if that investment itself were liquid, there would be no penalty. There's no tax and no penalty if distributed after 5 years or age 59 and a half. For the 10% penalty, each conversion has its own five-year clock. So it's only the interest that's going to be taxed.
Once you hit 59 and a half, that's not a penalty anymore.
Right.
So you can take your money out of your IRA, stick it in a 401k, or a Roth IRA, and you don't have to pay the tax penalty on that, like you would do if you're under 59 and a half.
Okay. So you have to pay income tax on the amount that you convert from your IRA to your Roth. If you subsequently, after that, take that money out of the Roth IRA, you do not have to pay a penalty, 10% penalty, if you're over 59 and a half. But if you're under 59 and a half, then you do have to pay
the 10% penalty.
Right. And since in our example, the people are 65 years old, they're past that 59 and a half barrier.
They will have to pay the tax on the conversion. But again, that alleviates them of having to pay any tax on withdrawing from that Roth as well. And again, after 5 years, on any interest that they would withdraw. What comes out first? Principal, the $5,000. Again, let's say it grew to $7,000 by another $2,000. The $2,000 would come out free of income tax after 5 years. But no penalty regardless, okay?
Okay.
Because they're over 59 and a half. So if you do want this five-year clock and distribution ordering rules sheet really handy, just call our office, call Melissa. We're happy to send that to you or have you come by and pick it up.
Okay. 947-3992.
You got it.
So are we doing stats, Nathan? Is that it?
That's right, yeah. I got some interesting stats here. Tying back to our earlier conversation of hopefully some rate decreases on the horizon. Mortgage applications for the week ending January 5th of 2024 increased 9.9% for the largest weekly gain since January 13th of 2023.
I wonder why that is.
On a year-over-year basis, mortgage applications increased 2.1%, ending what was a 148-week record streak of declines in the year-over-year reading. Strength in the report was driven primarily by mortgage refinances, which increased 19% on the week and 30% year-over-year. Another interesting stat. So in trading on January 11th of 2024, Microsoft's market cap of $2.886 trillion narrowly exceeded Apple's market cap of $2.883 trillion to briefly take the crown as the world's largest publicly traded company. It was the first time since November 17th of 2021 that Microsoft has topped Apple's tight grip at the top of the list, and that is according to Bespoke.
It's incredible. I had mentioned this to you. I believe the top five companies in this AI sphere, if you will, overwhelm several countries' total stock market capitalization. I think it was including China and Japan. It was amazing, the value in these companies.
Yeah. Also, ETFs, so the U.S. exchange-traded fund industry, saw inflows of $598 billion in 2023, along with roughly 520 new ETF launches during the year. But there was also a record 244 ETF closures, with an average age of 5.4 years that collectively averaged a decline of 4.9%, in the year leading up to their demise.
So some of them didn't work out very well.
Yep. Also, speaking of ETFs, ETFs are set to increase their Bitcoin adoption, even as the SEC approved Bitcoin ETFs on January 10th, 2024, as recently as December, just 39% of all advisors surveyed expected a spot Bitcoin ETF in 2024. While pessimistic on its approval, 88% of advisors who were interested in purchasing Bitcoin for clients were waiting for the approval of ETFs before investing client assets. And that's according to Bitwise.
A lot of it has to do with the volatility of Bitcoin and also approval through compliance. So many advisors are limited into their ability as to their ability in authorizing those trades for clients.
Especially given that it's such a highly speculative investment.
Yeah.
You bet.
Speaking of retirement planning, the last stat here, New England Patriots coach Bill Belichick and Alabama Crimson Tide coach Nick Saban stepped down from their teams one day apart last week. During their tenures, each coach took their team to its respective championship game, whether that be the Super Bowl for Belichick or the college football national championship for Saban, 9 times, and each won their championship 6 times.
Wow.
Isn't that incredible? Talk about a record of achievement. Yeah. Having the right people at the right place at the right time and having to know something about coaching as well and inspiring people.
Yeah.
Have you ever watched or looked online to the Lions after game
press conference
and not the press conference, in the
locker room?
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh, he is just a dynamo at inspiring. It's no wonder that those guys love him. Seriously, he is it's just so inspiring to watch that go on. A couple 3 weeks ago when the Lions had beat the Vikings, I don't know when that, maybe 3 weeks ago, the two Ford women who are overseeing this whole team came in, and the older one, I'm not sure of her name, Margaret.
Or Martha, rather. Martha's like 95 perhaps.
Yeah, she's wearing, she had a walker.
Yeah.
She said, "I've never been more proud of our Lions team." And it's like, whoa, that's awesome.
"I've never made more money in the season.
Thank you for those ticket prices." Yeah. They hit an all-time record, did they not, for this upcoming game?
Ratings was the highest since last year's Super Bowl.
Wow.
Yeah, but they brought that team back, what, early 60s or 50s for like $9 million bucks?
Yeah.
So pretty good investment.
Yeah, very good. One of the more valuable teams. But the ticket prices for the upcoming game between them and the Bucks, all-time high. All-time high, I think. Over $1,000 on an average.
Mm.
That's saying something.
I don't think that football, we talked about this. I'd much rather be, you know, everyone has a high-def TV. They've come down in price over the years. You get instant replay. You can make your popcorn. You can go up to park, pay to
you
park.
Stay warm.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I like that.
I'm sure there's some difference in going to an actual game, but yeah, there is a lot to be said for the coverage that they afford and seeing those cameras fly over the guys, you know, as they're heading down the field and all the rest.
All the drone footage
The cameras themselves, I think they're on cables, actually.
But yeah, that's amazing. Yeah,
it is.
If you study the NFL production, it is amazing what they pull off. The number of cameras they have. Think about the director and the systems they've perfected. You know, it's like, I want a close-up on the coach's face. Now go to the above shot and see the whole team. Now zero in on the running back. I want an instant replay. And, you know, they'll show a guy that runs and he gets 3-4 yards, and the commentator right away says, "What happened there was the blocker pulled out," and they'll have instant replay immediately to go along with what this guy's talking about. It's like,
it is amazing.
No wonder the TV ratings are so high.
Yeah, you can really see what's going on.
Great production.
Actually, maybe even learn a little bit.
Well, you'll be back next Thursday. Prout Financial Design's new retirement radio repeat, Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock.
You betcha.
And next Thursday back live before then, 947-3992. Thank you, Heidi Cartwright, Dennis Prout, and Nathan Prout.
Thank you, Ron.
Thanks, Ron.
Thanks,
Ron. A great day.